Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is for informational purposes only. The content is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified health provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition. Never disregard professional medical advice or delay in seeking it because of something you have heard on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare show. If you think you may have a medical emergency, call your doctor or 911 immediately. Focus on Females does not recommend or endorse any specific tests, physicians, products, procedures, opinions, or other information that may be mentioned on the radio show. Reliance on any information provided by Focus on Females or others appearing on the show at the invitation of Focus on Females is solely at your own risk. Now, it's time for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Here, we create clarity out of confusion and guide you through today's healthcare maze. Each week, we'll focus on a different medical topic with a guest expert answering your questions. Future topics and guests can be seen at www.focusonfemales.com. Call in between 12:30 and 1 p.m. on Sundays and present your case to our experts. To get involved with today's clinic, call now in Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Be proactive with your health. We're here to focus on you. And now, our host, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
The Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic is on. Today, we will be tackling one cause of headaches and visual loss, typically in women of childbearing years from 15 to 45 years of age, pseudotumor cerebri, or increased intracranial hypertension, with guest expert Dr. Mitch Drucker, neuro-ophthalmologist. But first, this radio healthcare clinic and the free Focus on Females Women's Healthcare Symposium, the largest in America with 1,800 women attending, are both brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit foundation whose mission is to create an interactive, dynamic, community-based health safety net resource for you. Participation in these education programs will enable you to better partner with your existing doctor, leading to more effective office visits, faster results, and a reduced economic burden of avoidable medical and emergency care. We save lives and protect families. Today's clinic, pseudotumor cerebri, or again, increased intracranial hypertension. And as mentioned, my guest expert, Dr. Mitchell Drucker. Dr. Drucker is a neuro-ophthalmologist at the University of South Florida Eye Institute, as well as the Department of Ophthalmology Residency Program Director. He is an attending physician at James Haley Veterans Hospital and is the Chief of Ophthalmology at Tampa General Hospital. Dr. Drucker graduated from Cornell University and the University of Florida College of Medicine. Dr. Drucker completed his internal medicine internship at Brown University in New York, and his ophthalmology residency was completed at the State University of New York in Brooklyn. He served a two-year fellowship at Wills Eye Hospital, studying under Drs. Peter Savino, Norman Schatz, and Robert Surgot. Dr. Drucker has been a practicing neuro-ophthalmologist in Tampa since 1987 and has been listed as a best doctor in America for the past 14 years and has won four teaching awards at USF. Mitch, it's great to have you here today.
Thank you, Steve.
Now, Brown University is not New York, is it?
No, it's not. Providence, Rhode Island.
There we go. Okay. Well, the topic of today is pseudotumor cerebri. Pseudotumor cerebri, there's a word tumor in there. What does that mean?
That means you don't have a tumor.
Okay.
Pseudo means false, and tumor is a mass, and cerebri means the head. People who have tumors of their head can have elevated pressure inside their head.
Okay, so from a mass, because the skull is a bony confine, right? And so if there's any kind of mass, that would tend to increase the pressure.
Exactly. And people with pseudotumor don't have this mass and have an elevation in pressure inside their head. That is why it's also known as idiopathic intracranial hypertension. Idiopathic means we have no idea what's causing it. Intracranial means inside the skull. And hypertension means high pressure.
Okay. Now let's take a step back and look at what makes the pressure inside of the skull. Obviously, there's a brain there, but there's also a fluid that's being produced.
Yes, it's called cerebrospinal fluid, meaning the fluid is produced inside the brain, and it stays in an area of the brain called the ventricles. And that fluid also runs down the spine and also surrounds both optic nerves.
Okay, so the so-called central nervous system, the brain, and the attached spinal cord is bathed in this fluid. And the optic nerves, are being part of the brain, are also bathed in this fluid.
Exactly. And the brain is covered with something called meninges. People know the term meningitis. Itis means inflammation. And meningitis means that these meninges, this covering of the brain, is inflamed. If there is high pressure inside the head, the meninges can get stretched, and they cover the optic nerve like a sleeve covers the arm.
So, and the fluid is between the sleeve and the actual brain.
Exactly. Okay. So it's pushing out on the sleeve and pushing in on the nerve. And if you picture a balloon being squeezed and the end bulging out, that's pretty much what's happening to the optic nerve. So that when we look inside somebody's eye, we can see the beginning of the optic nerve, and it swells just like that part of the balloon that's being squeezed.
Because there's no place where the fluid can escape, or it's not escaping properly.
Exactly. That actually may be one of the causes of this problem, that flow of this cerebrospinal fluid, this CSF, may be impeded somehow in its trying to leave the brain.
And normally it would return to the blood vessel system, the circulatory system.
Right. It goes into the veins around the brain.
Mm-hmm. Okay. All right. So this is how, generally speaking, how you think of this disease. That is to say, there's a elevated pressure due to, well, is it due to excess fluid, Mitch, or is it due to, what actually do we know?
Well, it could be due to too much production of fluid. Mm-hmm. It could be due to blockage of the flow outside. Mm-hmm. So if you have a meningitis or other problems with your meninges, where there's an inflammation or an infection, it may be difficult for the fluid to get out of the brain. And that could raise the pressure. But it also could be from an overproduction. And we'll talk a little later, but one of the ways we treat this is to try to decrease the production of the CSF inside mm-hmm. the brain.
Now, in the cases where, for example, there's a meningitis, that would be a different diagnosis, correct?
Correct. Okay. You could still have elevated pressure, but it would not be called pseudotumor cerebri or idiopathic intracranial hypertension. Here you would have a cause for it.
Mm-hmm. Okay, so the reason why a patient with this disease would come to see a doctor would be what? What are the symptoms?
The most common symptom that a patient has, and remember, a symptom is something the patient says they have wrong with them, and a sign is something that the doctor picks up during the exam. So the symptom is generally headache, but can also be visual loss, either central visual loss looking straight ahead, peripheral visual loss to the sides, sometimes double vision. And it can also be transient visual obscurations.
Which means?
Which means that for up to 5 seconds, there can be black spots in their visual field, their peripheral vision, generally in the superior or top part of their vision.
Well, so that term, transient visual obscurations, is very specific for black spots.
Exactly.
Okay. Can this disease cause fluctuating vision?
Yes, it can. Some people will have their pressure fluctuate throughout the day. Certain body positions may cause the pressure to be higher than others. And at that point, they may notice these TVOs. Now, the transient visual obscurations are not an indication of dire consequence. It's just a symptom and a sign of this disease, but it has no prognostic value.
Mm-hmm. And is these transient visual obscurations or these black spots in the superior part of your visual field, can that occur from any cause of increased pressure or just maybe a heavy cough or straining?
Yes, it can. It can be caused by coughing getting up quickly. Mm-hmm. If your blood pressure doesn't change when you stand up rapidly enough, you can see these same spots.
But in that case, it's a different cause.
Right, and patients generally know it. They say, geez, doc, I got up too quickly and I noticed this. Mm-hmm. The patients with pseudotumor cerebri could be just sitting at their desk and have these episodes happen.
Well, I was doing a little bit of prep for this today, and I found that the incidence can vary between, say, 2 in every 100,000 persons up to 20 in every 100,000 persons. What makes it a greater risk? What are the risk factors for pseudotumor cerebri?
The major risk factor is being overweight. This also is a problem more in women than men by a factor of possibly 9 to 1.
Is it known why women run a greater risk of developing this?
There are just guesses. We think there is a hormonal basis for it, but the only abnormality that's been found, and this is only within the last 6 months or so, has to do with vitamin A metabolism, and it was not shown that this is sex-related.
Okay, so, and I remember from medical school that, and a residency, that excess vitamin A increases your risk of developing this disease, pseudotumor cerebri.
Correct.
So you're saying that there has been some altered vitamin A metabolism found in patients that tend to get this disease?
Yes, they have found there's a correlation between vitamin A metabolism right now and weight gain. But it does not explain the difference in sexual predilection, meaning why women are so much more likely to be affected by this.
So in other words, those patients with abnormal have gained weight and found to have abnormal vitamin A metabolism are equally men and women.
Well, we don't know that number right now. This is just in basic research regarding vitamin A metabolism. It has been tied to weight in certain animals. But in our human population, we have never found a hormonal difference to explain why women get this. But I can tell you anecdotally, from my personal experience with patients, in 1990, I had a woman come to see me who 2 days prior had the onset of severe debilitating headache, nausea, vomiting, and was noted to have swollen nerves by the doctor who had seen her just before me.
Okay.
I took a look into her eyes, and she indeed had this ailment called papilledema. Mm-hmm. That is the expression for swollen optic nerves. She had a spinal tap done,
which
meaning a needle was placed in the spine, in the back, a very, very tiny needle, I might add, to check the pressure of the fluid, that cerebrospinal fluid that we mentioned before, and it was greatly elevated. The patient had been taking birth control pills for the week prior to the onset of her headaches. So we stopped the birth control pills, gave her the medicine that we would normally give somebody with high pressure inside the head, a medicine that would stop production of the cerebrospinal fluid, or at least slow it down, and she got better almost immediately. We kept her on the medication for about 5 or 6 months, took her off, and about 2 months after the cessation of the medication, she comes back in with severe headache again. I look at her nerves are swollen. I said, did you go back on birth control pills? She said, no. But what we did find out that afternoon was that she was 1 week pregnant.
Mm-hmm.
And she had not gained the weight from pregnancy yet. So the only thing that had changed was her hormonal status.
So there's some hormonal relationship. It's just that it's not been elucidated yet.
Exactly. And this same patient got better, had her child, and that was probably 1992. I didn't see her for 14, 13 years. She comes in. She has now well past giving birth, not on birth control pills, but she has gained weight. And she now has elevated pressure again with swollen nerves.
So it sounds like those people that do develop this have multiple causes, maybe some physiologic causes where they have an increased or decreased threshold for developing this disease.
Indeed. But mainly it is weight gain.
Mm-hmm.
And it could be rapid weight gain. It could be chronic weight gain. But most of these people are extremely heavy.
And when we come back from a quick break, I'll ask Mitch, what is it, if it's known, what is it about weight gain that increases the predilection to develop this disease? We'll be right back on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We're tackling pseudotumor cerebri. Be right back.
The Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. Call now in Hillsboro, 813-289-1860. Anywhere else, 877-969-8600. More in a few moments.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you.
Do your eyes have a foreign body sensation or are scratchy and sandy? Do they burn, sting, or itch, or are heavy and tired? Maybe your eyes are sensitive to light or your eyelids achy and sore. Have you seen countless doctors and still can't find relief? Have they told you, sorry, but you'll have to live with this and nothing can be done for you? Well, first, it's likely you suffer from dry eye. And second, don't stand for those answers anymore. Just because someone else doesn't understand your dry eye problems, go to the only eye doctor in Central Florida that specializes exclusively in dry eye and related diseases. Meet with Dr. Stephen Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where you will be given up to 2 hours of face-to-face time with the doctor to get at the root cause of your dry eye pain, fluctuating vision, and redness, plus begin targeted therapy right away. Haven't you waited long enough?
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
16.
Okay. All right, welcome back to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic. We are tackling increased intracranial pressure, otherwise known as pseudotumor cerebri. And on the line is Mary. Mary, welcome to the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
Hello.
Hi there. Now, you're a patient of Dr. Drucker's?
Yes, I am.
And could you give us your age?
I'll be 39 next month.
Okay. So tell us about your experience with this disease. How old were you when you first recognized that there was something not right with your vision? Or maybe there was some other, maybe it was headaches. What actually brought this to your attention that you had a problem here?
I was 34, and I was driving from Dade City to Tampa, going back and forth to work, and I noticed that I was having problems seeing. My vision would blur out.
Was that both eyes, Mary?
Both eyes, yes. Peripheral vision problems, just halos around lights, just like, you know, I had very few headaches.
Okay.
But it was all visual. And then I was also getting very nauseated. I'd get dizzy, lightheaded.
Okay. Did you have these black spots in the upper part of your visual field?
Yes.
Okay. And did all these symptoms come on at the same time? Was it a gradual onset over the course of days or weeks?
I don't know. It's like one day I noticed I was having some blurriness. And so with driving, that's a long drive. It's an hour drive that I was driving. I just noticed more and more that, okay, I can't see right now. I'm on 301. Where am I going?
Hmm.
I guess it with my eyes, it got progressively worse when I finally went to see an eye doctor.
So the tipping point, the thing that told you that you need to be checked was which of the symptoms, or was it just basically they all progressed to the point where you just acknowledged that you need to be seen? What was the thing that pushed you over the edge to be evaluated?
Well, I was losing my vision. That's okay. Scary.
Okay, yeah.
And I believe she also had a whooshing sound in her ears.
Yeah, I do. I still have the whooshing sound, and I have pain in my ears sometimes, ringing sounds.
And had you had those symptoms, that is, the pain in your ears prior to development of this?
The ringing in my ears, yes, but because I worked on the phone a lot, I sold medical supplies, I related it to just the phone headset being on my ears so much. But yeah, I did have the ringing in my ears for several months before that, just didn't pay much attention to it.
Okay, so this began roughly about 5 years ago, and when you came to the conclusion that you need to be evaluated, what did you do and where did you go?
I went to see Dr. Kaufman and Zephyr Hills, and I just from like looking on the computer and trying to figure out what was wrong, I thought, well, I don't know, I got glaucoma or something, I don't know. And he did an eye exam, checked my pressure, and then basically had me come back for the glaucoma test.
Okay.
And the day I went in, I was having severe headache and vomiting to where I'm in his exam room, and I'm like, can you hand me the trash can, you know?
Right.
And so that's when he told me to go see Dr. Drucker.
Okay. So you saw Dr. Drucker, you were still 34 at the time?
Yes. I had just turned 34 in June, and this was all taking place in like September, October, right in there.
All right. And what do you recall from that initial evaluation? Mitch, maybe you want to jump in here. Was it clear what she had when you saw her?
Oh, yes.
Okay, and how do you your patients that come in, Mitch, when they have obvious pseudotumor cerebri, how do you counsel them? In this particular case, were you pregnant at the time, or by any chance?
No.
Okay.
My youngest child is almost 11.
Okay, how do you counsel the initial patient on the initial evaluation, Mitch?
First thing we have to do is make sure of the diagnosis, and we need to rule out tumor cerebri, meaning a mass inside the head. So the first thing we do is get an MRI or a CT scan of the head to make sure that it's normal. We also get something called an MRV, magnetic resonance venography, meaning we're going to look at just the veins in the head to see if there's any blockage there, because as you'd mentioned before, the cerebrospinal fluid will exit the brain through the veins. And if there's a blockage in the veins, we need to know that. So we make sure there's no problem inside the head that can be found on neuroimaging. And then every one of these patients who has papilledema, meaning swollen optic nerves, must have a spinal tap, because you have to diagnose what the pressure is inside the head to make the diagnosis. And you have to make sure that there isn't an infection or an inflammation or other kinds of tumor. So you're looking at the sugar in the cerebrospinal fluid, and you're looking at the protein. If there's high protein, it could mean that there is a tumor. If there's low sugar, it could mean that there's an infection. So you need to get those parameters on the spinal tap, and you have to get the pressure taken. And oddly enough, when we as neuro-ophthalmologists request this to be done by neurologists, by radiologists, they often forget to do the opening pressure. And you have no idea how embarrassing that is for us, because we then tell the patient, you know, we ordered this test, they put this needle in your spine, and they didn't get the number we needed. So they have to go back and have it done again.
And that number you need, the opening pressure, is the pressure in the cerebrospinal fluid when you put the needle first in there.
Exactly.
Which is how you make the diagnosis. Well, it's obviously key to the diagnosis of elevated intracranial pressure.
Right, and that's why we call it an opening pressure, meaning when the needle first goes in. Sometimes the person doing the spinal tap will give us a pressure at the end, but not at the beginning, which doesn't really help us.
Right.
So once the diagnosis is established, what I tell the patients, first and foremost, is that this is something that they have some control over.
Okay, and we'll be more. We'll be back in a moment again with more on the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic, speaking with Mary about pseudotumor cerebri with guest expert Dr. Mitch Drucker. Be right back. Focus on
females. With SRN News, I am Michael Harrington in Washington. Not everybody at the University of Notre Dame is opposed to President Obama's commencement address today. Theology professor Pastor Richard McBrien tells Fox News Sunday, despite differences on abortion, Mr. Obama's positions on immigration, poverty, and other issues are consistent with Catholic teachings. Protesters have gathered in advance of the speech, though. Some students will have crosses and small baby's feet images on their mortarboard hats today to protest the president's speech, which should be coming within about a half an hour or so. At least 900 million people now live in shantytowns and other makeshift settlements in cities vulnerable to disasters such as earthquakes and floods, the UN says. A new report expresses concern about those people. And Sri Lankans have poured into the streets in spontaneous celebration today as the Tamil Tigers have admitted defeat in a 25-year-old rebellion against the government. This is SRN News.
How do we know the economy is getting better? Because the price of gasoline is going up.
AAA says gas prices have risen nearly 40%.
And now Congress is planning to tax the sugar in soft drinks.
This tax would include all sugary drinks like Coke, Pepsi, and Sprite.
They argue it would fight America's obesity epidemic and bring in badly needed dollars.
Now, more than ever, preparing you for prosperity. Obama style. Talk Radio 860. WGUL.
It's that time of year again. Time to donate your boat or car. The friendly folks at Boat and Car Angel can guarantee you the highest tax deduction allowed. And your donation will help change the lives of children around the world. Visit Boat and Car Angel on the web and get an instant donation receipt, free pickup, and four-night luxury vacation. Call 1-800-CAR-ANGEL or online at boatangel.com. Help save a child. Donate your boat or car.
Kim Komando here, America's beloved digital goddess and host of the nation's largest syndicated weekend radio show. Does your digital lifestyle sound like this? It doesn't have to. Whether you need buying advice or tips on protecting your family online, you have me, Kim Komando, right by your side. On air, online, and offline, I've got your digital back.
Kim Komando, Sunday afternoon at 2 on her new radio home in Tampa Bay. Talk Radio 860 WGUL.
Your host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic is ophthalmologist and eye surgeon Dr. Stephen L. Maskin. Dr. Maskin is the medical director of the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, the proud sponsor of today's show. At the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, Dr. Maskin specializes in solving difficult dry eye and cornea disorders with patients traveling from over 35 states and 5 continents for his evaluation. Dr. Maskin manages these dry eye disorders using innovative medical and surgical therapies, including the use of placenta-derived amniotic membrane, a new patent-pending natural eye lubricant to provide relief for dry eye sufferers, an exciting new procedure to unblock obstructed tear glands, and a topical cure for eye surface cancer. Dr. Maskin has been successfully managing difficult dry eye cases for over 20 years and is board-certified, fellowship-trained, and a fellow of the American College of Surgeons and American Academy of Ophthalmology. He's been selected a best doctor in America every year from 2000 through 2009 and as an America's top ophthalmologist by Consumers Research Council of America. We hope the Focus on Females education programs, including this show, will help you and your family find the health care that works for you. Focus on Females believes in saving lives and protecting families. And please, visit drmaskin.com, and if you have not found relief for your painful red dry eyes, come in to see Dr. Maskin at the Dry Eye and Cornea Treatment Center, where comfortable eyes lead to restored lives.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
All right, welcome back. Focus on Females, talking about pseudotumor cerebri. Mary, are you still with us?
I am.
Okay, so when you saw Dr. Drucker for evaluation of this problem, and you You had a battery of tests performed. Rich was, what did you find as a result of the tests?
Well, first of all, I wanted to say thanks, Mary, for coming on with us. Appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And we do a normal visual exam, meaning nothing special for the patient with possible pseudotumor cerebri. We check their acuity, which means we ask them to read the chart that has the big E on it, check the pupils to see if they respond normally to light, have them move their eyes to see if they move in all fields of gaze, and check their peripheral vision with our fingers and also with a computer, which will map out areas where people are seeing well and where they're not seeing well. And then we look in the back of the eye.
I think you mentioned before these patients can sometimes have double vision.
Yes, they can. When the pressure is high inside the head, you can have pressure on the sixth cranial nerve. There are 12 nerves that come out of each side of the head. The number six nerve controls the way the eye moves to the side. And this is actually the only other neurologic problem that patients are allowed to have and still be called pseudotumor cerebri patients.
Okay.
This nerve, the sixth nerve, is passing under a ligament inside the brain called Gruber's ligament, and it makes a little canal there called Durello's canal. And when the brain is full of high pressure, it pushes down on this ligament and squashes the sixth nerve. And it gives people double vision where the images are side by side, and it's worse when looking to the side that's involved.
Now, Mary, you never had the double vision. Is that correct?
I did, but for a real short time.
So you had moments of double vision.
I had it right before I had the eye surgery that Dr. Drucker performed.
Which brings us to therapy. Okay. Mitch, take over. After evaluation, what did you conclude, and how did you go from there?
As I was saying before we had the break, the first thing I tell the patients is that they have control over this disease, that they can lose weight. Statistics have shown that up to, or at minimum, a 6% weight loss can lead to improvement of signs and symptoms. And let's just say somebody's 200 pounds. A 6% weight loss is 12 pounds.
Mm-hmm.
If they're 300 pounds, a 6% weight loss would be 18 pounds.
So it's not out of the realm of a reasonable
exactly.
possibility within a few weeks.
But sometimes we don't have those weeks. Sometimes the visual loss can be rapid,
mm-hmm.
and we don't take chances. If somebody has impairment of their central acuity or their peripheral vision, we will institute therapy with a drug called Diamox. It's also called acetazolamide. And it's a medication that causes you to urinate, but it also causes the cells inside the brain that make the fluid, the cerebrospinal fluid, the CSF, to work less efficiently. And it stops fluid from being produced. And it works within 6 to 12 hours. So you can start therapy right away. If somebody were to have fulminant, dramatic visual loss, there's another medication that you would also give, and it's called a steroid medication. Prednisone is the most common oral steroid that people would take. Cortisol is another name for it when it's injected. And you use that to temporize if you think you're going to need to have surgical intervention. Mm-hmm. Now, going back a couple of steps, somebody like Mary, you would try Diamox and give that time to work. You see them back in 1 month, check their visual field again. If there's no improvement, you can increase the dose of Diamox. If there's improvement, you keep them on. If they're getting worse, you think about intervening with a surgical procedure. And there are three different types of surgical procedures that could be considered. Two are done by neurosurgeons and one by ophthalmologists. The neurosurgeons can put a tube inside the brain into one of these ventricles that holds the cerebrospinal fluid and run that fluid from the brain into the belly. And those are called VP shunts. A tube can also be placed into the spinal column and the fluid can be run from the spine into the belly, and that is called an LP shunt or a lumbar peritoneal shunt. Those procedures can help with the headache and with visual loss. But they are fraught with problems. You are entering the brain, so you can have infection. You can have too much fluid taken off, too little fluid taken off, or the tubes can get kinked or blocked off. The procedure that I do is called optic nerve sheath decompression. And there are two ways of doing that. You can just make little slits in the sheath that surrounds the optic nerve, or you can actually take out a window of this sheath, and that term is fenestrating the sheath. So you may read, or patients may read, about optic nerve sheath fenestration. It's the same procedure as optic nerve sheath decompression, where we put the slits in. Jeff Quitko, who's another neuro-ophthalmologist in town, does windows. I do slits.
Tell me any downsides thus far that we've seen regarding the optic nerve sheath decompression procedure.
In the literature, there is about a 1% to 2% complication rate. And the problem with calling something a complication is that we're not all clear on what a complication is. To me, a complication is vision getting worse or a patient getting meningitis. Some people consider a complication if the pupils turn out to be a different size and it bothers the patient. Mm. So it's not been standardized. In my clinical experience, I've never had anybody get worse vision after surgery. I've been very, very lucky. There can be, as I mentioned, infection, bleeding, but there can also be blockages of the blood vessels that take blood into the eye or blood out of the eye. And if you get what's called a central retinal artery occlusion or a central retinal vein occlusion, you can have cataclysmic visual loss.
Is there a risk of the procedure?
That is a risk of the procedure, and every patient is told before we do the nerve sheath decompression that their vision can get worse.
Does the nerve sheath surgery alter the elevated intracranial pressure?
Again, some controversy there. You can read in review papers that studies have been done which show absolutely no effect on the overall pressure, that they think there's just a localized decrease in pressure or even a localized scarring of the optic nerve so the pressure wave cannot be transmitted to the nerve. So there's a lot of different theories about why the surgery works. What we do know is that it definitely works.
Can a patient have a successful optic nerve sheath surgery with improved vision, but still remain with double vision due to persistent elevated intracranial pressure?
Definitely. Because the procedure is not lowering the pressure throughout the system, they can still have headache, and they can still have double vision. In fact, the thing I tell patients, and I just did this with a patient yesterday, I operated emergently on someone at Tampa General Hospital, and we did both sides at the same time. And I told him before the surgery that this is not a surgery for his headaches, which were severe. It is not necessarily a surgery to improve vision, but it's a surgery to stop it from getting worse. Mm-hmm. So sure enough, this morning, what does the patient say first thing? Oh, my headache is better, doc. Thanks. So you can never tell. Patients don't read textbooks.
Right. Right. Okay. Mary?
Yes.
Now, what was the therapeutic approach in your case?
Well, first of all, he started me on the Diamox.
And how did you do, I guess he started about, 1 gram a day of Diamox, his initial dose?
No. Okay. 500 milligrams in the morning, 500 in the afternoon.
Okay, so 1 milligram total per day.
1 gram.
Yeah, and what do you think, did Diamox help you initially?
No, not, he increased the dosage when I went back, and then we ended up have an optic nerve sheath decompression on both eyes. So initially, no, it did not help.
All right. And
it did cause symptoms, though. There are side effects of Diamox that pretty much every patient will get.
Mm-hmm.
As a physician, you must warn the patient that they're going to get tingling and numbness in their fingers and toes and around their mouth, and that sodas will taste terrible.
Metallic. Did you have that experience, Mary?
Yes, I get the tingling in my hands and my feet. And around my mouth, I don't think I've noticed that.
And what kind of period or test period did you have on the Diamox before it was decided to go further, roughly?
We started the Diamox in November, and I had the surgery done in February.
Okay.
That was November of 2004, and February of 2005 was the surgery.
And so you had the optic nerve sheath?
Yes, on both eyes.
On both eyes, okay. And and what have you noticed?
After the surgery, I noticed that my vision did improve. And quite a bit.
And Mitch, does the improvement occur pretty much within the first few days? Or?
Yes, yes. And we have Mary's visual fields that she and I were both looking at this week, and the visual improvement was dramatic in both eyes within a week or two of surgery.
Mm-hmm. And Mary has, now let's see, the surgery was done a few years ago, correct?
Four years ago.
And have you needed any other therapy since that surgery?
No, I take the Diamox still.
Okay.
Because I still do have headaches and pressure.
Okay, so Mitch, do you feel she still has some element of intracranial elevated pressure?
I think Mary's pressure is still high. That's why she's still having the whooshing sound and the ear problems. But about a year ago, she also had a recurrence of some visual field defects. Mm-hmm. And that's why her Diamox has been maintained and now increased a little bit, because the pressure is still elevated. And this can be seen in patients who've had nerve sheath decompression who might have some modicum of weight gain again, or in patients who start up on birth control pills or who find themselves pregnant again.
Do you fall into one of those categories, Mary? Have you had some weight gain, 5 to 10 pounds, would you say?
Or, yeah, I had put on some weight, yes.
Okay. Have you been on birth control pills?
No.
And Mitch, while we're at it, are there other medications that also can affect increased intracranial pressure? I think we mentioned vitamin A can do so. I guess some people.
Vitamin A can cause the pressure to go high. And we sort of joke with patients sometimes to just make sure they don't eat polar bear liver because that is extremely high in vitamin A. But there are patients who take a lot of vitamin pills. Mm-hmm. And if they're taking a one-a-day pill where they're getting 10,000 units of vitamin A, and Americans tend to think more is better, so somebody might take 5 to 10 pills. Mm-hmm. And if you get up to 100,000 units a day, you're in a danger zone.
And also, I guess some people also take vitamin A for skin conditions, like Accutane is one medication.
Exactly. Teenagers who are fighting acne can have problems due to the Accutane that they're ingesting. Also, another medication used is minocycline, a tetracycline derivative.
Mm-hmm.
And this is also used for acne and other infections. But when you stop the medication, they get better, which is a great
reversible
thing. It's definitely reversible. And in terms of medications you can take to treat, if for some reason the patient is allergic to Diamox or just is really bothered by the side effects, there's another carbonic anhydrase inhibitor that can be tried called methizolamide, which goes under the name of Neptazane. Mm-hmm. Steroids can be used, but I mentioned that we only use those prior to surgery as a temporizing measure. But Lasix and hydrochlorothiazide, which are both diuretics, have some benefit in terms of preventing the cerebrospinal fluid from being made. Mm-hmm. But there is a whole other group of medications that are used to control the headache that can cause some weight gain, and that's where we wind up with some problems sometimes. If the neurologists are giving the patients medication to control the headache, like tricyclic antidepressants, some like amitriptyline, are wonderful for headache control, miracle drug for headache.
That's a general headache therapy, right? That's not specific for a headache in this setting.
No, but it can help the headache in this setting,
right?
But it can also cause weight gain,
which in turn can
makes the disease worse.
Right. Okay, we're going to have one more quick break, and we'll be right back with more on the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic.
This radio healthcare program is brought to you by the Focus on Females Education Foundation, a not-for-profit organization. Our mission is to make you an expert on your individual medical problems through dynamic and interactive educational programs. Real physicians answering real questions, speaking plain English, and giving practical, ready-to-use information on a wide variety of topics. Participation empowers families to better partner with their doctors. The result is more effective office visits, preventing unnecessary suffering, and eliminating the economic burdens of avoidable health and emergency care. We need your financial support. Donations to the foundation are tax deductible. Each and every dollar provides support so families can take control of their health. We have already saved and transformed lives for generations to come. Be a donor in what has been described as a phenomenon to reduce health illiteracy in our community. No donation is too small. To learn more about us and our free 5th Annual Women's Healthcare Symposium, March 27, 2010, visit www.focusonfemales.com. Donations can be made to Focus on Females Education Foundation, P.O. Box 320702, Tampa, Florida 33679-2702. Thank you. Confused about dry eye? Not getting answers as to why your eyes are so red and painful and your blurry vision that gets a little better with a good blink? Now you can learn all about dry eye, the causes, treatments, and home remedies from the number one best-selling consumer book on dry eye problems, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome by Dr. Stephen Maskin. Published by Yale University Press, Reversing Dry Eye Syndrome has been selected as a 2008 Best Book of the Year by the Association of American University Presses and a 2007 Best Consumer Health Book by Library Journal. Find answers for your dry eye. Go to your bookstore and pick up a copy of Reversing Dry Eye. You'll be glad you did.
Are you a man who has had any one of the following prostate problems, rising PSA, urinary symptoms, or a negative needle biopsy? Hi, it's Mike Gallagher, and yes, prostate disease is a tough thing to talk about, but you know, I'm glad to be able to get the word out if it means saving men who hear the message from having unnecessary surgery or dangerous needle biopsies. At the Diagnostic Center for Disease in Sarasota, unlike a lot of doctors, they don't push surgeries and they try to avoid biopsies. Dr. Ronald Wheeler has developed new groundbreaking MRIS technology that removes the guesswork from prostate cancer diagnosis. When men come in, their exact disease status can be accurately assessed. The good news is you do have less invasive choices that won't destroy your quality of life, but you need to get the facts. Call the Diagnostic Center for Disease for a free phone consultation. 941-957-0007. Write it down. 941-957-0007. That's 941-957-0007. Well worth the call.
Studio lines are open, so get focused, get involved, and get the advice you need for your health. In Hillsboro, 289-1860, and everywhere else, 877-969-8600. Once again, our host for the Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, Dr. Stephen Maskin.
Welcome back. Focus on Females Radio Healthcare Clinic, and we're talking with Mary about pseudotumor cerebri with special guest expert Dr. Mitch Drucker. Mary, can you hear me, Mary?
Yes, can you hear me?
Yes, we got you. Okay, so at this point, you're still on the Diamox. You've had a optic nerve sheath decompression for visual symptoms related to pseudotumor cerebri, and it helped you significantly, but you're still having some symptoms. And by the way, this was several years ago, and you're having some symptoms for which you're on the Diamox now. What do you have a question for Dr. Drucker? We only have about 5 minutes left, so I want to be sure that you have opportunity to ask any questions you may have about, what happens if kind of question.
Well, Mary did ask me the question this week, what if, just like you posed, and both she and I agree that we're going to delay any kind of surgical intervention for a while as long as her visual fields don't deteriorate, and give her a chance to lose some of the weight that she's put back on, and for the Diamox to temporize until that happens.
Okay. And do you have a follow-up question on that, Mary, before I...
No, Dr. Drucker and I talked a good bit the other day.
All right, well then, for our other listeners, Mitch, because we're focusing on weight control here, something we talked about on the break is bariatric surgery. How do you see bariatric surgery as a way to manage weight gain in these patients that are obese?
Bariatric surgery, that's where a surgical procedure is done to either shrink the size of the stomach, cut the stomach out, or put a band around the stomach so food can't collect in there, is reserved really for people who can't lose the weight medically. And I frequently write prescriptions so that insurance companies will pay for medically supervised weight loss because of the threat of blindness in these patients. And many, many of the insurance companies will go ahead and allow the supervised weight loss to occur. But I have had patients who've needed to have the bariatric surgery. In fact, the one person who had it was not so much that she was failing medical treatment, but she just didn't want to be bothered with the dieting any longer. And she said, I want to have the surgery. So she went in, had the surgery, lost a considerable amount of weight, not 18 pounds, more like 140 pounds.
Wow.
And she did great. Mm-hmm. She just kept the weight off for a long time. She's now starting to put a little bit of it back on, but things are going well for her.
Okay. So in those select patients, it is a possibility to go that route.
Yes, but it is only a last resort. It's not a definitive
Correct.
Initial treatment.
Okay. Okay, good. And let's talk more also about, for example, in Mary's case, if she starts developing symptoms of visual symptoms, the consideration of going back and doing another optic nerve sheath when one has been done previously. What are the considerations? Is there a general consensus in the literature or with colleagues that do these procedures as far as the outcomes?
We try to not go in a second time, but there are patients who've needed that. And it's been successful at the same rate as the initial surgeries are.
But there are other considerations.
But there are complications as a surgeon that you run into that you would not run into when you're going in to somebody fresh.
Mm-hmm.
Anytime you've operated in an area, scar tissue can form. And this is called fibrosis, and it makes the surgery more difficult. But in the few, and I stress there were few reoperations that I've done, it hasn't been a major problem for me.
Mm-hmm.
But other clinicians report that it's just more technically difficult.
Now, you take special adjunctive procedure when you go into your initial optic nerve sheath decompression. You share with me on break with steroid therapy. How would you describe that to our listeners briefly? We only have another minute.
Sure. What we do for the surgery, and we don't take the eye out of the head, so if anybody's mm-hmm. listening in there, we don't. It's not that horrible a procedure. It lasts only about an hour, sometimes less. We remove one of the muscles that pulls the eye towards the nose, and we then turn the eye away from the nose. And when we do that, the optic nerve is right in our field, and it's very easy to make the incisions or do the fenestration, taking the window out of the nerve sheath. What I do to try to prevent too much scarring after that is I inject solumedrol or methylprednisolone into the retrobulbar or behind the eye fat, and I also pour it over the optic nerve to minimize scarring and decrease inflammation.
Do these patients need oral steroid afterward as well or no?
I give nobody oral steroids afterwards because that will only cause them to gain weight at that point, and that's the last thing I want to do for them.
So not even like a 3 to 5 day course?
No, I will give it to them before if, mm-hmm. let's say, they can't have the surgery or for some reason I can't do the surgery immediately on a Friday. I will put them on steroids over the weekend. This gentleman that we just had, I put him on intravenous steroids Friday night, and we operated Saturday.
All right. I'd like to thank my special guest here because we are at the end of the hour. Mary, thank you very much for joining us today. Dr. Drucker, Mitch, thanks so much. And we welcome everybody to return next Sunday on the Focus on Females Radio Health Care Clinic. We will be tackling how to tolerate chemotherapy with Dr. Ismail Khan from the Moffitt Cancer Center as our special guest host. This is Dr. Steve Maskin.